afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of July 5th, 2015. I'm Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor at Information Week, and your host for today's show. And we've got an interesting show because there has been just a ton of news this week, some of it good, some of it not so good. And to help me talk about it, this week we have Information Week contributor Larry Loeb. Larry, welcome to Information Week Radio.
Thank you, Kurt.
Well,
I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I feel a wave of tap dancing come over me.
Oh, dear.
All right, I'll stop.
We'll try to keep you dancing only in the most IT appropriate manner for the rest of the show, but no guarantees to anyone. Well, the first thing we need to talk about, interestingly enough, I don't think it has anyone tap dancing except maybe for some of the managers and leaders at the Office of Personnel Management. Because we got news that, well, that breach that, you know, originally hit 1 million people and then 4 million and then 8 million. Now they're throwing out 21 million people. And if you realize that in a lot of the cases of those records, that it includes information on family members and former coworkers, all of a sudden it's looking like about a quarter of the entire adult population of the country could have been affected by this one breach. So what do you think? Is anything available for us to do, or should we just go ahead and admit that sometime last year the notion of data privacy finally died, killed by what we'll generously call incompetence at OPM?
Well, it's even deeper than that. When you combine OPM along with the Anthem hack, which seems to have been using the same kind of exploits, there's a dearth of privacy for sure. They've already found spear phishing attacks targeted to people using being from trusted coworkers or something like that. So the secondary attacks are underway.
Well, when you talk about secondary attacks, I mean, as far as you know, is this only hitting the people whose names are in that database? In other words, current or perhaps past government employees, or has it started to reach out to some of their family members and former colleagues?
Well, this is probably the first attack generated at the low-hanging fruit that they got from the breaches. In other words, they may have established a database of people they're interested in, and in an attempt to perhaps gain more information about them or to plant a rootkit in their machines, they're trying to get these people to do certain things, like click a URL. This is beyond the usual Nigerian 505 scams.
Right.
From the information that I've gotten, it appears both legitimate and targeted.
Well, now, I suppose the question that I certainly have, and I've heard a lot of other people ask it, do you think that this marks the end of the revelations? In other words, basically, has everyone whose record was stored at OPM already had their privacy ripped away, or do you think there are revelations yet to come?
That's a bit hard to say right at this point. I find it extremely interesting that yesterday the director of OPM says she wasn't going to resign, and then finally found it within herself to go to President Obama this morning and fall on her sword. That may mean there's something coming out besides what's already come out. But what's already come out is pretty bad. They access the SF-86s, which are what are the forms that everybody in government who wants a security clearance has to fill out, listing all the contacts, past financial history, yada, yada. This goes back to your original question. That kind of information, as far as I know, like contacts, are not being targeted yet, except perhaps in an espionage way. But if other things were happening over the past years, and it has been years, one of the things that became evident was that in 2012, the OPM Inspector General was jumping up and down screaming about this. The ex-director didn't come on board till 2013, so it's hard to point a finger directly at her. But these kind of vulnerabilities were just waiting there. They may have been used in ways that have not come out yet over the past years. Evidently, they got in through faking the credentials of a government subcontractor that actually processes security background checks. And, of course, they announced at the beginning of July they're shutting down the automated web system for running security checks. Shutting that down is not a big deal. It's sort of a good thing because they may have found a way to penetrate it. But unless they're going to announce that penetrations like that have occurred in other unexpected ways, I think the $22 million or whatever it finally ends up to be will be the direct exposures. If you work for the government, you're hosed.
Okay, so with all of this going on, except for, you know, perhaps pay attention to who your subcontractors are and understand that the idea of horizontal attacks are very real, are there any lessons we can learn from this yet? Have we gotten to the point where we can say, yeah, there's something here that all of us should pay attention to, or are we still in the middle of the explosion and waiting for all the shrapnel to stop falling?
Well, this has been going on for a number of years now. The first data breaches were economically motivated. People wanted to get your credit card information and sell it on some dark board. These kind of attacks have been a lot more quiet because, in a way, the U.S. government's between a rock and a hard place here. Snowden revealed how the U.S. does this to other countries. And now other countries are doing it to us. It's got to be there's a bit of blowback here in a number of ways. And it's hard to find moral outrage about somebody giving back what you've already done.
Well, that's very true. I imagine that there are a lot of people around the world who are, you know, if not chuckling over this, at least not wasting a lot of time giving us sympathy. And as far as I can tell, the people who deserve sympathy are all those folks who are now left to look over their shoulder and wonder, about when their private information is going to be used against them.
Well, it's a bit different for government people. They have responsibilities because of their various jobs. Their personal information can be exploited against them in ways that just knowing that a credit bureau won't help with. The implications, if you take it all the way out, is that they're going to have to burn the intelligence services and rebuild in major ways. They're probably going to have to burn the federal infrastructure of data storage. You got to remember, a lot of this legacy stuff goes back to when IBM and COBOL reigned supreme. You having just done COBOL articles, you can appreciate this. But there's going to have to be major changes in both the design and the implementation of data storage and data manipulation services. This comes along right at the time when people are shifting to the cloud, and I think a direct fallout is that who's ever using the cloud for this sort of stuff, even if they're non-governmental, will have to find out, where's my data, how is it being protected, what are you doing with it? That's the sort of big effect I see happening. It requires a few intermediate steps, but the predominance of owning your own data center and hiding your stuff there may be over.
Well, since we know that we'll have more to talk about on this later on, this is far from the end of the story. Let's see if we can move on to some other news. I know you have been doing an awful lot of writing for Information Week, and I was curious, was there one story that you covered that really stood out for you this week?
It's been a slow news week, I must confess. Firing at OPM is the most fun because it's big, splashy, and Good Morning America will talk about it. And it's rare that that kind of thing extends beyond the geekitude, but there it is. The splash factors of that sort of thing get pretty big. In the last week or two, I've really been focusing on stuff that a CIO would find interesting, you know? And that's not necessarily what the general public would feel interested in.
Well, what sorts of things have you been finding interesting from that CIO perspective?
Well, it really has a lot to do with what a CIO is aware of, if they're busy holding on to their own turf. The cloud has been really quite large. It is extending in ways that a lot of CIOs are really, really trying to come to grips with, because it's beyond the point where they can just safely ignore it. Their other C-level occupants have known enough about it to find out that first it exists, and it may be able to cut down on capital budget requests or something like that. So they're sort of interested in it, and it's forcing CIOs to become more and more expert in its use. They can't just say anymore, yes, there's a cloud out there and we'll get to it someday. That day is here. It's really accelerating the pace on that, I think. There have been, you know, other things going on of a business sense. Cisco is spending more money than the entire gross national product of Botswana buying companies. They're in a screaming mode about becoming irrelevant. Again, this relates to the cloud. If the cloud is beginning built up and not so many enterprises will be buying their switches, they have to figure out what's going to do there. There's always been the fun stuff, relating to clouds. Chicago came along and in a complete land grab decided, well, we're going to tax any cloud services we want.
So if the cloud has either a business presence or a customer or maybe some of the bits heading to the cloud pass through Chicago, they'll tax it.
They will. I think it's reprehensible how they're doing it. They took a tax that was really designed to cover personal property being loaned to someone. And they're taking it and extending it out to a service that is not the way it should be taken, quite frankly. I have a feeling that the end result of all this will be a complete and utter revocation of this deal entirely. It's going to come along and bite them in the butt the way they did it. But that's just my take.
Well, it's going to be awfully interesting to see how that goes, and that something tells me that that lawyers are going to become involved at some point, and I always hate to see that. Now, one of the interesting things, you're talking about the move to the cloud and what that's doing to companies, I couldn't help but notice that this week saw the release of Office 2016 for Mac OS X. And it seems like Microsoft's old strategy of keeping the Macintosh community a couple of releases behind the Windows community in terms of functionality and user interface is coming to an end. Between that and the announcement that the whole phone thing might have been ill-considered, it seems like the march of Microsoft toward a cloud-oriented company continues. Is that your take, or do you think there are some other things at work?
Oh, I think there are lots of things at work. Microsoft doesn't have a desktop to monitorize anymore. It's not quite sure what it's going to do, by the way. And in a number of ways, this reminds me of what happened to IBM 5 years ago when the computer was not a mainframe anymore. They weren't selling the hardware they were used to. Their revenue stream dried up. What happened with IBM was that they ended up selling most of their capital stuff. Their upstate New York chip making facility was in the news recently because they kept Moore's Law going by going down to a 7-nanometer fabrication. But they did it in a partnership. They didn't do it just by IBM anymore. They would have, if they could have, I think. But they realize that risk spreading is necessary and rather important for them. They don't have the money to do Google moonshots. Microsoft may come to this realization as well. They're sort of sitting on a pile of cash. They've got Steve Ballmer out of the way. Now what do you do? They're trying the cloud. They've nicked the prices of the cloud up a little bit in Europe, which may or may not be a trend. But their main competitor is not Apple anymore. It's Amazon. Amazon would love to take Microsoft down for so many reasons, one of which is cloud provision. Microsoft really hasn't come up with, I think, a comprehensive vision of where they're going and what they're doing. They wasted a decade. It's biting them where it hurts because they've got all these legacy things they have to support. They're trying to become relevant. When's the last time they didn't monetize a Windows update, for instance? But they're trying it. They're gonna give away Office, basically. If you want it. It's already available as huge apps for your smartphone, just to become relevant. And that relevancy is what I think they've really, truly lost over the last few years.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about that, because one of the other things that I've seen in the news this week, of course, is people saying that because Apple's not selling a million watches a day, that this is a failed platform and that Apple has lost its relevancy. I mean, is everyone who creates an actual product heading towards irrelevance? Are Google and Amazon the only companies that are going to matter in another couple of years?
That depends if we bypass Google and the web. One of the things that I wrote about this in some article, which I could probably cite if I had to, but Google is trying to get themselves in your pocket, but using the web. They're showing how it can be done with, like, their health project and things like that, where they're showing, yeah, you can use the web to do this, and they're also getting together with Microsoft, who also has similar interests, to get browsers to work faster, you know? So they just are basically trying to keep that oil well in their basement, which is based on knowing what you use the web for, again, relevant. Now, Apple Watch. Golly gee whiz. They would like it to be successful, but you know what? It's not core. It really is not. They're trying to make another gadget. I don't think it will really affect the overall picture at Apple, even if it totally tanks. One of the things that's come out on a story I'm working on right at the moment is that even though in the face of PC sales that have fallen 10% in the second quarter, Apple went up 16%. They're selling a lot of stuff, you know? It's not just one sort of thing. It's a lot of different things. They're doing the tablets. They're doing the entire gamut of what people use electronics for. So, yeah, they want to extend it with a watch. They want to extend it. But, you know, iPads aren't the game they used to be either. Those are hiding in your phones now. Things evolve. They may decide to do something with a watch that's standalone as opposed to tethering onto an iPhone. That would be an interesting change.
That
I don't think they need it to survive, though. I think they want to grow their business in a lot of ways, and this is one of the ways they have to grow it.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if they're able to grow it the way they want to. Lots of things happening this week that point to the future in terms of following the news, and we'll certainly be doing that. And it's time for us to talk a little bit about the future, specifically the future of what we're going to be covering on Information Week in the coming days. Larry, what kind of things do you have your eye on that people should be looking out for in the coming days?
Well, I sort of gave away my Monday story with the decrease in PC sales. I think that's a real big trend, and I think that there is an enormous amount of hokum being served up by research firms when they look at this. Gartner, for instance, just ignores Apple's sales gains entirely by dumping them into an other category. IDC, at least, is aware of them and does some analysis on them. I don't think it will be insanely obvious where the PC market as a whole is trending, because Windows 10 is not going to be the big driver that other window releases were to purchase new machines. It'll run on the machine you already have. It doesn't make requirements that you must change to use it. I think that's fairly smart on Microsoft's part, frankly. But it also shows something else that I think is one of the big five-year trends, which is that we're rapidly approaching asymptotic values on where machine performance needs to be an 80% solution. That is, a machine that'll do 80% of what a lot of people want. We've gotten faster processors, we've gotten faster executing programs, and a lot of people, I think, are sort of in their comfort zone right now. Sure, they may want a little better graphics processor to plug in somewhere, or they may want some specialized features, but whether or not that's going to be something that drives them to go out and purchase a new box, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure.
Well, I know that in my case, I'm certainly holding off. I'm not seeing anything right now that's forcing me to run out and buy a new machine, although there are some sexy new boxes out there. Tempting, but not sufficiently tempting to pry the credit card out of my wallet. We'll see if that changes anytime in the next 12 months or so. Well, with all your stuff coming up, Larry, how can people follow you on the Tweety Pipes and other social media to figure out what you're doing from day to day?
Oh, I'm real easy. Just use my name, Larry Loeb, with a ampersand in front of it for tweets. That's pretty much the best way, although I'm, of course, on Facebook and G+ and LinkedIn and all those major stuff. But what I tend to do, excuse me, is to blast out a story after I've got it posted, so that if you're interested on what I'm doing, you can follow it. Would you like to see my tap dance now, Kurt? I practiced all week.
Well, show us some tap dance love, Larry, before we head out.
I will be happy to. The band's in the back, so you can't really hear them, but I've got the phone right by my feet. Huh? A little more?
That's spectacular. I...
Oh, come on. I did a double reverse and everything. I mean, this is in honor of Stan Freberg.
To get that kind of sound on dirt, I'm in awe.
It takes me a lot of hard work to do it.
Well, Larry, I appreciate you taking time out from your writing and your tap dancing practice to be with us today.
My pleasure, Kurt. You know that.
And if our listeners want to follow me, they can do that at KG4GWA. I've got a piece coming up. We've still got some great discussion going on about some articles that I wrote over the last couple of weeks, one on COBOL and the other on Fortran. But this time I'm turning my attention to a newer language, 10 Things You Need to Know About HTML5. That piece will be going up by Monday. Check it out and let me know what you think. If you're programming in HTML5 already or in the process of learning HTML5, I'd love to know what you're doing with the language and what your thoughts are on how it compares to HTML4 and all of the bits and pieces of add-ons, plugins, and other languages that HTML5 is supposed to replace. Well, please join us again next week at the same time for Information Week Live. I'd like to thank Larry Loeb, and thanks you for being with us. Would not do this without you, our listener. So for all of us here at Information Week, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for listening. Hey, we'll see you next time.